All right, before I call up the next initiative, I just want to announce that on 178 through 181, we're going to hear those at 4 o'clock because one of the proponents is delayed out of state. So if there's anyone here on that, we're trying to set a specific time. And then we may have an issue on 168, lowering the voting age. That proponent is also somewhat delayed. So it just depends how our schedule goes, but we anticipate we may be flipping 178 through 181 till the end. But anyhow, the next item, where everybody is here, is 2017-2018 number 173, campaign contributions.
Hi.
Morning.
I'm Gwen Benevento. I'm representing the proponents, BJ Nickel and Greg Brophy, who are here today.
Okay. Do you want to just start by telling us what you believe the single subject of your measure is?
Yes, we believe it's adjusting individual contribution rates when a candidate directs $1 million or more to influence his or her election.
Okay. Is there anyone here wishes to speak on this? No. All right. Any questions from the board on single subject?
No.
To make a motion?
I move that we find that proposed initiative 2017-18 number 173 has a single subject and the board has jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, that takes us to the initiative language. Do you have any comments on the
Do we
staff
need this is a constitutional change. Do we
do you have any comment on whether this is an addition to the Constitution or merely a repeal?
It would be an addition, I believe.
Okay. So, you want to make a motion, Glenn?
Sure. I move that we find that as to propose initiative 2017-18, number 173, that it adds language to the Constitution and would be subject to the 55% vote.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Okay, so to the staff draft. Do you have any comments on the draft?
Yes, we do. We would suggest the title of the staff draft be reworded to avoid public confusion and in order to promote a general understanding that there is a precondition to raising contribution limits. We suggest stating in the title first that if a candidate directs $1 million contribution, then the limits would be raised for candidates. In particular, it refers on line 2 to all other candidates without first addressing the candidate who would trigger the change.
Okay. All right. Do you have suggested language or just, no, okay.
I do have suggested language and we can talk about the
order
as requested after I do it. I do think this is one which we can actually do the simpler method and dump the concerning.
I do too.
So Steve, do you wanna plug that one in?
All I'm fine flipping the order. Doesn't matter to me, yeah.
Is that still the opponent's desire?
That would be our request, but.
So, so we just say providing if any candidate in a state, so if any candidate in a primary or general election for state office.
Yeah, however.
Right. Okay, so just cut it, Steve, and.
I'm sorry, I'm unclear on.
So what we're going to say is,
if,
an amendment to the Colorado Constitution providing.
That if it, any candidate.
Yeah, that if any candidate.
In a primary,
Yeah, we're going to have to keep cutting because.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So if any candidate in a primary or general election for state office, so down there, yeah. Then
every candidate in that election.
Yeah.
May.
Yeah. And get rid of the two. Yeah.
Not grammarian. Do we do a comma after election on line three before the then?
Yeah. Do you think we need to say that election or election for that office? Because it kind of makes it sound like every candidate on the ballot can then jump in.
Candidate.
And every other candidate?
Well, but it would still be for the election of that office, I guess is my problem, not.
I left the other out because it. By its terms, I think it waives it for the person who.
That's true.
Knowing to their own campaign as well.
Maybe we don't even need to say in that election every other candidate for that office. Is that implied?
Need that election so that it doesn't become a permanent change, so that next year that same office.
Well, that's a good. Point. Would it apply to that office for future elections?
No, but
yeah.
I might.
What?
I might still keep the in that election for the office in that election. It's only
okay,
three words.
That's fine.
Just keeps us safe.
Okay. For that office in that.
We could say in the same election.
That's more words.
Less daddy.
Every okay, that's fine.
I need.
Do we need to say for that office at the end or for the office? Normally allowed.
How about just normally allowed?
Okay, allowed.
Yeah, we can get rid of the three words there. Okay. So right now it's an amendment to the Colorado Constitution providing that if any candidate in a primary or general election for state office directs more than $1 million in support of his or her own election, then every candidate for that office in the same election may accept five times the amount of campaign contributions normally allowed.
All right. Okay. I move that we set the title for proposed initiative 2017-18 number 173 as was just read and now appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Excellent. That takes us to 2017-2018 number 183, interest rates on payday loans. Thanks.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name's Sarah Mercer. I'm an attorney at the law firm Brownstein Hyatt Farber Schreck here on behalf of the proponents of proposed initiative 183. Trista Gibson and Bill Fritz are the proponents of the measures, and they're here. They've signed their designated representative affidavits as well.
Do you want to just start out by telling us what you believe the single subject of your measure is?
Sure. The single subject of proposed initiative 183 is to reduce the maximum annual percentage rates on short-term installment loans that are given out under Colorado's Deferred Deposit Loan Act.
Any questions on single subject?
No.
I move that the board find the proposed initiative 2017-18 number 183 has a single subject and we have jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Do you have any comments on the staff draft?
I do. Before we get to the staff draft on the title, I did just want to make a comment on the record about the fiscal impact statement, if that's okay.
You can, but we don't actually do anything with it till the rehearing. But you can make a comment.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to, you know, this certainly is an issue that we'll consider addressing in a rehearing, but just for the record, I wanted to, you know, just raise that, you know, we share the same concerns on the fiscal impact statement that was created for proposed initiative 183 as the fiscal impact statement for proposed initiative 126, namely that the fiscal impact statement and the abstract failed to provide any meaningful information to voters around the economic impact of this measure. The reason I state that on the record is because since that rehearing happened, the Colorado Supreme Court issued a ruling without opinion in the matter of proposed initiative 97, in which the title board intervened and filed an answer brief asking the court to provide some guidance as to the role of ledge counsel, the title board, the proponents and the opponents in the process of creating those fiscal impact statements. This is still an open question before the court. It's been raised in the appeal for proposed initiative 126. Certainly, another way to get this issue before the court may be for the title board to actually send back the abstract or the fiscal impact statement to the legislative council for revision and sort of see what happens from there too. Just a point that I wanted to put on the record. With respect to the staff draft, my comments are pretty limited in just really to the use of the word payday as a catchphrase. So that's the issue that I'd like to address. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. Great. So really the issue with payday is that the use of the word payday loans, payday lenders, is that these are not payday loans. As was discussed in the rehearing on proposed initiative 126, there was a comprehensive regulatory overhaul that happened in 2010. To Colorado's Deferred Deposit Loan Act, which is where these loans are housed. And it effectively abolished payday loans. And it transformed them really into a different loan product, a six-month short-term installment loan. I want to pass out just a couple of pieces of information. First is the rules from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. You may be aware that last year, under the Obama administration, the CFPB undertook a very large and comprehensive study. Payday loans is an issue of national concern, of course. And they did really a comprehensive review of what are all of the laws in each of the states and what should the CFPB, you know, how should the CFPB intervene, issue some broad-based guidelines that certainly states were free to, you know, be more restrictive, but kind of put out some guardrails around this industry. And even there, you know, there's extensive discussion in this 1,600-page rule about Colorado's system and how Colorado's system and Colorado's industry now, after the reform, is no longer sort of a payday loan system. So let me just pass this out. I want to just highlight a few things. So I did not include all 1,600 pages of the rule. I just pulled out a few excerpts, but this gives you a flavor. The sort of second page in your packet begins to talk about the 11 states and jurisdictions that have regulated payday loans on their own. And on that third page, kind of in the middle of the page there, it says, in 2010, Colorado's legislature banned short-term single payment balloon loans in favor of longer-term six-month loans. As you can imagine, sort of defining what a payday loan is was part of this rule. And the short-term single payment balloon loan is really what is a payday loan. And you'll see then on the third page, which is page 622 of the 1,600-page rule document, they note that commenters raised Colorado's laws as a model. They, though, rejected using Colorado as a model because following such an approach would involve banning covered short-term lending altogether, since that state allows loans of at least 6 months in term. So although sort of the colloquial term and the parlance of calling these loans payday loans is still in use sort of around the community and in law, they really are not payday loans anymore. And the reason that that's important is really to the second and last point that I'll make, which is that using the term payday in that colloquial way really misleads voters who are unaware of those 2010 reforms, who are unaware that Colorado actually has had this model reform legislation that has abolished the payday loans as we know them and has transformed the industry into this short-term installment loan industry. And the issue there is that these voters who are unaware of that 2010 reform are going to lump the idea of payday loans as used here in this title with payday loans as they think of them nationally, or I think more importantly, in states where they've moved from. I've got another document to pass out to you that according to the U.S. Census Bureau, you know, Colorado's population was just over 5 million in 2010 when that reform was passed. But it has grown, it grew to an estimated 5.6 million people in 2017. It's probably a little higher than that now. Here, let me just pass these out.
So let me ask you this, though, because, here's how I see the problem. I think I agreed last time that I thought payday lenders was a catchphrase. But I think it made the question, right? It's in there.
It's in the title for 126. That's right. Title.
Okay. So yours is a competing measure.
Sure. Yeah.
So that one goes up with payday loans. And the voters say, I hate payday loans. And they all vote for this measure to kill payday loans. Then your measure goes up and it doesn't say payday loans. So nobody understands your measure is a competing measure. And so you get less votes than payday loan got because your wording is something different than payday.
I appreciate your sort of acknowledgement and maybe some assistance to our political strategy on this. But I think, you know, for the proponents of these measures, it's important to get the terminology right. And, you know, for these 600, you know, these sort of roughly 600,000 new Colorado residents, they likely move from a state where the payday lending industry has never been reformed.
Right.
And so without more clarification about what this actually is, in terms of what payday loans actually means, what kinds of loans these are in the title, they're going to lump that in with what they know from the other places that they've come from. And so, you know, in order to sort of protect the voters from that, you know, I think it's pretty important that we get the definition right. And, you know, there was a suggestion, Madam Chair, by you during the rehearing for proposed Initiative 126 to just describe what these loans are. And I think we can do that in a way that voters can understand in a fairly, you know, sort of easy way to describe them.
I think we can too, and I thought we could then. But the problem now is that we also have a duty to write the questions in a way that don't confuse the voters when we have competing questions. And it seems to me that at this point we're in a bit of a quandary because if we write it differently, it makes it sound like we're not doing the same thing. Well, and the voters won't know that we're talking about the same loan structure. They will think that these are different loan structures. They will think that a payday loan is different than a short-term, whatever the terminology was, loan. And that's my concern at this point in not using the word payday. I mean, I guess if that's really what you all want, you know, I'm certainly willing to entertain it. But I do think that it's going to be a bit confusing for voters.
Well, I think that you make the point and the case for the proponents here in distinguishing between what a payday loan is and these, you know, short-term installment loans. And there's still an opportunity for correction of the title. I mean, the appeal for proposed Initiative 126 is still before the Colorado Supreme Court. If you set a title today in a rehearing, you know, in a couple of weeks, I mean, this is certainly an issue that they can resolve. This is an issue, you know, I think that there's some opportunity there to get some resolution without, you know, if we're persuasive in making this case today, you know, I think there's some merit in considering this in a little bit of isolation, or at least considering some of this information.
All right. Well, either way, go ahead.
126. I think that we're sort of, you know, there in terms of, you know, kind of what the confusion would be to voters, because these really aren't payday loans. And the last piece of documentation I'll pass out is, go ahead.
Thanks. Leaving aside whether they're payday loans or not, are they still deferred deposit loans, or are they exclusively installment loans?
They're not really deferred deposit loans either, even though they're still under the Deferred Deposit Loan Act. I mean, that was not changed. But the way that the industry currently works is it's not necessarily, it's not tied to people's paychecks in the same way that you think about, you know, having a, you know, sort of a signed paycheck.
But leaving aside like a paycheck, so no one, if I went and got one of these loans, I'm signing a piece of paper, but I'm not giving them like a check in the amount of the loan to cash later if I don't pay up. Or am I?
No, I don't know. Usually there's an authorization to draw out the amount of money from, you know, from an account, but not at a certain
time. That's the same thing. Okay, that's what I want to know, because I don't know that I share the chair's concern with the confusion payday versus non-payday. I mean, I think they're, you know, very different proponents, very different ideas. I noticed that the statute currently uses the term deferred deposit loan and payday loan interchangeably. To me, if it is in fact a situation where there's the authorization where if I don't make my payment or payments by X date, you direct withdraw the money from my account, then to me that's still a deferred deposit loan, and I'd be inclined to use that term rather than short-term installment loan.
Sure, I think we're open.
I think issue is, were you here last time on this?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, my issue is that this is the same language we saw last time, and last time we called it a payday loan.
Or at least we said payday lenders.
Well, whatever we said,
yeah.
If we say something different this time.
Yeah, I don't have the other measures in front of me, unfortunately. I thought they did quite a bit of different stuff.
And I agree. I think that, you know, one of the terms that, you know, the proponents of proposed Initiative 126 offered was to use deferred deposit loan, but that seemed to not be descriptive enough, which is why, you know, I thought maybe just describing it as what it is. But, you know, that's a fine alternative. I'm not sure that that's more descriptive than... It's more of a term of art, I think, than what these actually are, but that's fine.
But, I mean, what it is, I mean, I think if it's still the situation where there's an automatic withdrawal on the due date if I don't pay up, you know, rather than something like a car loan or collateralized loan where, you know, they come seize the property or they start doing other things, then to me, regardless of the length of the period, it still feels like the same thing, a payday loan, and maybe someone gets paid infrequently. So I'm less concerned about, I mean, I think either payday or deferred deposit loan works for me. I think short-term installment loan doesn't work for me because I'm not sure it accurately describes exactly what's going on.
Well, I mean, if there's no money, there's no repayment, I would guess. I mean, if you have something to draw on and there's no money in the account, then the bank's not going to.
Right, but some of them always go bad anyways, which is why the interest rates are, you know, higher than any number of other kinds of loans.
And, you know, the reason that sort of that description as a short-term installment loan, you know, the reason that we would advance that is because that is how they're described in, you know, distinguished from what people traditionally in their minds think about as these sort of small single balloon payment loans, which Colorado just does not have anymore. And so that's where sort of the issue of describing it as what it is, but separating that out from sort of the catchphrase of when people would sort of confuse what they are thinking about when they're voting with what's happening in other places of the country is really important. I want to just pass out one other document for the literature, which is this: the Pew Charitable Trust has sort of put out a policy document for use by other states and by the federal government in talking about the success that Colorado has had in its reforms to this industry, and you know, which I think further supports this idea that these just aren't—they're really no longer payday loans.
Are they? I'll wait till we get back to the microphone. But are they banned? Is it? Are they always installment loans? Like, does the ban? I get it. The ban goes to this shorter than 6 months, but can the terms provide that it's a single payment? Like, you have to pay X back by X date, as opposed to you have to pay, you know, 1/6 of X back every month or whatever.
So in 2007 was the first sort of crack at reforming the industry, and it did not change that. And that was found to be, you know, not really successful in getting at what the issues were perceived to be by policymakers. And so the 2010 reforms, yes, do now prohibit sort of this lump sum, you know, single payment loan in Colorado. So they have to be installments.
Thank you.
Anything else?
No, I have some suggested, I did just sort of take the liberty of drafting up some suggested language that I'll pass out. It does use that phrase, you know, short-term installment loans. Certain short-term installment loans.
Is there anyone else who wants to speak on this question? Go ahead.
Hi, Martha Tierney here on behalf of the proponents for 126, which is before the Supreme Court right now. I did want to address just a question that Mr. Gellender had, and these measures are not very different. They are competing measures, directly competing measures. So to the Madam Chair's point about confusing the voters, I think it's a real concern. And if it would be helpful, I can give you copies of 126 so you can see what it looks like. But I think it was Julie Pellegrin who was sitting for that measure, so maybe you aren't as familiar with it. But I do think that the statute would be violated by not using the same term, because voters aren't going to know that they are competing measures.
And just in response to that, you know, I think, you know, there's additional information that voters, when they actually vote, will get to understand these measures, you know, the Blue Book namely, but which will likely refer to the Deferred Deposit Loan Act and providing, you know, background on these measures. But, you know, as Ms. Tierney indicated, these are similar measures in the sense of, you know, the reduction of the annual finance charges, and there's some mirroring in the language. So, you know, the use of, you know, sort of this different term, I don't know that creates, you know, a lot of, I don't believe it creates a lot of confusion. I think it accurately states what this is doing.
What effects would be different from this measure than from 126?
126 seeks sort of in one fell swoop to limit the, to eliminate basically any additional charges beyond the annual interest rate that can be charged. So this measure here simply reduces the maximum interest rate, but still allows for maintenance fees, for example.
So, I mean, my concern is that I think voters are going to think these are companion measures. They're going to think that there's one to reduce the interest rate on payday loans, and then there's another one to reduce the interest rate on certain short-term installment loans. And they're not going to understand that one is different than the other. I don't like being in this position because I wasn't a proponent of using what I thought was a catchphrase back then, but now I don't know what to do about it.
This covers the same loans, though, as 126 did.
Correct.
I think my inclination then would be somewhat reluctantly to use the payday loans term, because in the statute, I mean, what's strange about this is we've apparently had this law on what these things actually are, this change to the law, but the existing statutes continue to use the terminology deferred deposit loan. And then if you look at the definition for that, it says or payday loan. So it's exactly the same thing. So, you know, and we're usually pretty safe tracking the statute, and we avoid your concern and Ms. Turney's concern about the confusion with the competing measures. So I would be inclined to do that. I do think we can shorten the staff draft, and I don't think we need to reference lenders at all because we're talking about the loans, not the people who are making them.
Well, last time we said lenders. I mean, we should say whatever we said last time. Okay. Which I didn't like what we said last time, but I'm just saying that. I think we should say whatever we said last time.
Okay.
You want to pull it
and
up?
Mr. Gallander, if I may respond to that point about the use of the statutory language, because I agree with you, that's usually a good place to go. This is a really unusual case, I think. To have Colorado be a leader in the country in changing the type of loan product that an industry that has been known for a really long time is offering, while other places in the country continue to have continued to have, you know, I think what can fairly be described as some predatory practices. I mean, in Nevada, there was a sort of, quote, payday lender who was allowing people to put their pets up as collateral. I mean, Colorado has cleaned up this industry. The colloquial use of that term, the use in the statutes, has remained, which isn't an issue for people who know about the industry. I think the concern is that in this unusual and unique case, voters who have no idea what has happened and what has transpired, they're not customers, you know, they don't use and take out these loans, they're not government officials who understand, you know, the statute, they're not policymakers, you know, they're not sort of business people who are involved in the industry, that they're going to have this negative connotation because they have this negative sort of connotation that is from sort of elsewhere. So I appreciate the sort of wanting to lean on the statutory language. I really believe this is a very unique circumstance where voters are going to be swayed by how they feel about this. Not to mention that this current administration has decided to roll back the rules that the CFPB has imposed. And so they may feel like Colorado has, that they may feel and believe that Colorado's industry is sort of predatory in the ways that it is in other places. And that this is their chance to reform the industry because no one else is doing it. And they're just wrong on that. And that the use of that word is going to lead them down that path.
Well, yeah. I 100% agree with you, but I
appreciate
don't know.
That. Thank you.
I mean, I think at this point it takes the Supreme Court to send back the first one in order to change the second one. I just don't know how we put up this second question and have it be different from the first without confusing voters. So,
Karen?
You have it up.
That's the 126.
126.
Yeah.
Closed.
If I may, Madam Chair, because I think, you know, I appreciate the bind that, you know, you're sort of between a rock and a hard place here. You know, as I mentioned before, you know, the appeal on proposed initiative 126 is still pending. So if the board were to, you know, vote a different way, you know, obviously we would inform the court of that and request that they send back 126 so that there could be a reconciliation of these titles. So I think there is a way forward here to get the voters, to get these measures, 126, this measure 183 and 184, to a place where there is no longer, that there isn't voter confusion in November.
So I would be inclined to keep with the same language we did in 126, and if the court were to issue something between now and a rehearing, we could readdress. But I may be the only board member who doesn't share the concerns about use of the term payday loans. You know, it sounds like it's been almost a decade since it was changed, and the fact that people may have moved here from other states and where they had a different understanding of what that meant, that doesn't worry me about use of the term and the title here.
So in terms of the other sort of framing of the staff draft of the title, we didn't have any issues. I know that I see on the sort of the revision that was sort of done in real time with my explanation of the single subject. I think the way that the staff draft was written tracked 126. You know, and our concern with 126 as here is just simply the use of the term payday. So.
Okay. What do you want to do?
Well. Yeah, because I sat for the rehearing on 126, not the initial hearing, which is probably why I missed some of it. I mean, what I've done here, you know, is largely, as much as I think is taking sort of the lender out of it and, you know, going for brevity and being direct and just describing what it says. I mean, I think if we're worried about the inconsistency, changing deferred deposit to payday in both spots with that language works fine. If people otherwise object to the different structure of the title, then, you know, I'll defer to what you guys want to do.
I mean, I'm fine as is if that's how you want to send it up.
I could ask Mr. Roper, because, I mean, to me, you know, deferred deposit versus payday, I mean, they're interchangeable in the statutes. So
I would probably go with payday because that's that's what we did with 126, but I'm one of three.
I mean, I'd stick with deferred deposit, but I'm probably going to vote yes either way, just because there's arguments on both sides, and I'm probably not going to let one word in the title hold it up. Yeah, go ahead.
Madam Chair, if I might, Martha Tierney. I just want to reiterate that I think that what you raised earlier, that the voters are not going to know that these are the same loans. So if one's called a deferred deposit loan and it's right underneath one called a payday loan, they are going to think they are not the same loans they are voting on. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think that's true. I just am not sure that the second proponent in line should be completely bound by what happened to the first proponent in line. There's competing, trying to set a clear title, not confusing the voters, versus catchphrases. And I mean, there's just a lot of competing interests here.
Well, with all due respect to the title board, I think the voters have to come first here.
Well, yeah, but in considering the voters, I guess since my position the first time around was that payday was a catchphrase, that's where I walk a line here, because I think that phrase was confusing. So I don't know. Mr. Gellender, I think you're just going to have to make some kind of motion.
All right. You want me to read what's up there?
I'll read it. Right now it says a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes reducing the maximum annual interest rate of interest that a lender may charge for a deferred deposit loan or as an additional finance charge for the renewal of a deferred deposit loan from 45% to 36%.
All right. I move that we set the title as it's just been read and now appears on the screen.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay. All right. That takes us to my agenda. Steve, you have another agenda? I buried it somewhere.
184 is next on the agenda.
So that takes us to 184. And go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sarah Mercer with Brownstein Hyatt Farber Schreck here on behalf of the and appearing for the proponents, Bill Fritz and Trista Gibson, both of whom are here and have signed their designated representative affidavits in front of the notary. I can maybe just start with the single subject of this measure. The single subject of proposed initiative 184 is to reduce the maximum maintenance fees that can be charged for deferred deposit loans or short-term interest loans under Colorado's Deferred Deposit Loan Act to $5 per $100 loaned and up to a maximum of $25 per month. The arguments here, you know, our arguments here on title, can stop there.
Let's do single subject first. Anyone who wants to speak on single subject?
I move that we find that proposed initiative 2017-18 number 184 has a single subject and that the board has a jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. So that takes us to title. And did you want to incorporate your comments from 183 to the extent they apply to the whole deferred deposit issue?
Yes, thank you. In addition, not just to the title, but to the fiscal impact statement as well. Incorporate those comments and have the same concerns on payday, right. The use of payday here.
All right. Anything else?
I have a copy of a revised title for a proposed initiative 184 that I can pass out. I think making changes consistent with the changes that were made to proposed initiative 184 would make sense here, given the conversation we just had on that proposed initiative.
Okay.
Can I ask you a question about the amended draft?
Sure.
I noticed that in the second line you added the word percent after 20, so it now reads 20% of the first $300 instead of 20 of the first $300.
Yeah.
Was that in response to a question at review and comment?
Yeah, thank you. When I transcribed the initial, the wording from the statute into my word processor, I had inadvertently omitted percent from, which is appears in the statute.
Okay, so percent is currently in the statute.
Exactly, and okay. So they asked me to add that back in.
Thank you.
Ms. Tierney, you want to incorporate your comments or you want to make anything new?
Thank you, Martha Tierney. I will just incorporate my comments.
Okay. All right, so right now it's a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes reducing the maximum amount of the monthly maintenance fee that a lender may charge for an outstanding deferred deposit loan from the lesser of $7.50 per $100 loaned or $30 per month to the lesser of $5 per $100 loaned or $25 per month.
I move that we set the title for proposed initiative 2017-18 number 184 as it's just been read and appears on the screen.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No, on the same grounds as before, where I would say payday loan instead of deferred deposit loan to avoid the risk of voter confusion.
Okay. All right, that takes us to proposed initiative 2017-2018, number 182, transportation funding.
Thanks again, Steve.
Good morning.
Morning.
Mark Ruskin on behalf of the proponents, Tim Mauck and Kathy Noon, both of whom are here and have, I believe, signed their affidavits.
Do you want to just start by telling us your what you believe your single subject is?
Yes, 182 is an extension of an initiative for which the board is, as you unfortunately have to do, set multiple titles. This is increasing state transportation funding.
Okay. Any questions on single subject?
Move that we find that proposed initiative 2017-18 number 182 has a single subject and that the board has jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All right, that takes us to the language. Do you have any comments on the language in the staff draft?
I do, Madam Chair, and it seems like the process is assisted by having a red line, which I'd like to provide to the board.
Thank you.
We think that the language is, by and large, accurate and helpful. We do believe that since the measure, based on the staff review at legislative review and comment, because it relates to legislation that is enacted rather than a bill considered during a particular session, that this language could say that, and much like you did in a previous measure, probably lose a little bit of the language just so that the reference in the clause that is specific to 182 refers to legislation enacted at the 2018 session of the Colorado General Assembly. But other than that, we think the staff draft, which reflects previous language adopted, will work.
Questions from the board?
No, I've just got one or two super minor tweaks.
Is there anyone who wants to speak on this?
Oh.
Besides, sorry.
Never mind. You don't need to do your 55%.
No.
Motion. Sorry. Had a little bit of a
I know.
Tweak there.
Me too. All right. Go ahead, Jason.
Online, where is it now? 5 after 2019, things have increased. I think I'd strike requiring and say and require. And then down, I guess we haven't put them up yet. The changes Mr. Gruskin suggests I would generally do.
Could we simplify it even further and say legislation enacted by the General Assembly in 2018?
Well, that was going to go to my next change, whom is theoretically, we could have a special session. I'm pretty sure we want this limited to the regular session. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I guess that's a question for the proponents, really.
I don't know that we need the language of a regular session.
Okay.
But I also, if Mr. Gallander, if you think it provides.
No, I just didn't know if that was a concern for you guys. If, you know, you're thinking about what's pending now or could happen soon, because something could theoretically happen, like, you know, July or something after this process is all done, that might be less.
My guess is at that point, if it happens, we probably haven't been on the streets collecting signatures, and as a practical matter, that's all.
Okay.
Stephen, on line 10, I think you need in to be restored.
That's all I had, so.
Do we need to say Colorado General Assembly, or can we just say the General Assembly?
I think either would work. The voters are presumed to know the law that they're amending. And
I think if you do that, you can even just say 2018 legislative session and not say anything, but maybe that's pushing it a little too far.
I don't feel strongly either way.
I think I'd leave it in just to avoid any
so that there's possible no confusion issue about what municipalities might do, or
if Wyoming else introduces revenue anticipation notes, we don't have people claiming that something's happened here. We want to accept those, I think.
Okay. Yep. All right, so right now it reads state taxes shall be increased $432,800,000 annually for a 20-year period, and state debt shall be increased $3,720,000,000 with a maximum repayment cost of $6,200,000,000 to pay for state and local transportation projects and in connection therewith changing the Colorado revised statutes to 1. Increase the state sales and use tax by 0.35% beginning January 1, 2019, and require 80% of the new revenue to fund municipal and county transportation projects and 20% to fund multimodal transportation projects, including bike, pedestrian, and transit infrastructure, to authorize the issuance of additional transportation revenue and anticipation notes to fund state transportation projects as specified in legislation enacted at the 2018 session of the Colorado General Assembly. And 3, provide that all revenue resulting from the tax rate increase and proceeds from the issuance of revenue anticipation notes are voter-approved revenue changes exempt from any state or local revenue spending or other limitations in law.
I move that the board set the title for proposed initiative 2017-18 number 182 as was read and appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Good to keep going.
This may actually be a fairly decent place for us to take a break for lunch, considering I have only 2 other designated representatives. Those would be the designated representatives for 171 who have already executed their affidavits. No other designated representatives on our list for the day have met with the notary yet. So if you're in the room and you have not.
170 isn't here.
What about 170?
170, the proponents are here and ready to execute their affidavits.
Okay.
They have not done so, so we will need to take some time to get that done.
Okay. We could maybe do 171 in advance, or you want to take your break?
Well, I think Steve wants to have lunch.
No. I'm with Steve.
Steve, I always defer to Steve's judgment. So.
I mean, he's here all day. It doesn't matter to me. I'm leaving after this. Yeah, we can take a break. What do you want to do? Half hour is enough, or?
If you want to go ahead with the 171, because they have been here since 9 this morning, I would be okay with that, and then break after.
Okay. All right. Let's do 171. Unless somebody else wants to take a break. No? All right. All All right, we'll do 171 and then we'll go backwards. Words. 171 is legislative redistricting.
Morning, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Ruskin. I'm here with Bill Hobbs. We both represent the proponents, Tony Larson and Kathleen Curry, who are here and who have executed their affidavits.
I'm Tony Larson.
I'm Kathleen Curry.
All right. Do you want to start out by telling us what you believe the single subject of your measure is?
Yes. This measure addresses legislative redistricting through the establishment of a new commission for that purpose.
Okay. Anyone else here who wants to speak on this initiative, single subject? No? Okay.
I move that we find that proposed initiative 2017-18 number 171 has a single subject and the board has jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Now it might be appropriate for the board to make its 55% finding.
Do you have a position on what your initiative does?
This is a measure that adds language to the Colorado Constitution and therefore requires a 55% vote.
You want to make that motion?
Sure. I move that for proposed initiative 2017-18, number 171, we find that it does more than merely remove language from the Constitution and therefore requires a 55% vote.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any comments on the staff draft, Mr. Gerson?
I do, Madam Chair. I'd like to provide a red line that includes a handwritten note. Unfortunately, I was only able to scribble it on one copy, so I'd like to give that to Mr. Ward, but then address it for the board so that you know. Madam Chair, we think that there are a variety of elements in the staff draft that reflect, to some extent, current law or can be economized in terms of the language or that require emphasis where there are new provisions. And so, with your permission, I'd like to just walk you through the changes that we've made. And the one that appears on Mr. Ward's copy that might be helpful for your purposes.
Okay.
As you can see, we think that there divide the state into districts isn't nearly as reflective of the language and what people understand the process to be as to draw maps for those districts. We think that the criteria for the maps don't need to reflect communities of interest and political subdivision lines, which are currently requirements, but by saying that we're establishing criteria, the new criterion that is being added, of course, is maximizing competitive districts, and so we would retain that. I don't know that it is informative to voters in terms of preservation of communities of interest. It's kind of an arcane legal topic, and to adequately describe it, you really need to say preserve communities of interest and political subdivisions within districts. So it's, in order to make it clear, you have to make it longer, and that might not really help voters understand it. We think that the two prohibitions on what a map can do, either to benefit a partisan interest or to undermine minority voting can be a little bit more explicitly stated, and we've suggested to you language that would do that. We think that this language reflects either the definitions or the actual provisions that are within the measure, and therefore would suggest that it be used. And what we've done is we've talked about the maps and then the commission, rather than talk about it in the other way around, which I think was really where staff was trying to go. So we think that the important point, even more than how the commission is chosen, is the fact that you need a supermajority to approve a redistricting map. So we've elevated that. We've identified that there will be 12 commissioners in the underlying phrase that begins requiring at least 8 of the 12 commissioners. We have used the language that the board has settled on in so many of its redistricting proposals for how it refers to the 4 associated with each party. We would then suggest striking, because we think this element and prohibiting is important. People should know who's, the whole idea is that we're taking this out of a entirely political realm and putting it in more of a kind of citizen-directed realm. So we would suggest that it is appropriate to say who isn't going to be drawing these lines anymore. And then rather than have that be the final clause, the language that we would propose to add at the end is related to judicial review, because this is to some extent different, and what we are learning based on the pendency of these proposals over in the Colorado General Assembly, a much more politically focused issue than one would have thought. A phrase that is descriptive about judicial review, which I'd like to read into the record and which Steve has in terms of my copy. So we would add at the end of the ballot title, and limiting judicial review of a map to a determination by the Supreme Court that the commission or nonpartisan staff committed an abuse of discretion. Let me say that one more time. And limiting judicial review of a map. And the idea there is we are being clear that there is a map that will be in front of the commission, albeit other maps can be considered as an evidentiary matter, but there will only be one map to be reviewed, to a determination by the Supreme Court, which is important because obviously Colorado has had a judicial process that has originated in the district courts when the legislature has been deadlocked, that the commission or the nonpartisan staff, because remember, this measure provides both for a supermajority to approve a map or, if there is a deadlock, the nonpartisan staff to present a map, committed an abuse of discretion. To be clear about the standard of that judicial review, so it there is not a question that somehow the Supreme Court will be in a position of drawing its own map, a la Pennsylvania, or otherwise crafting a new solution, other than to direct the commission to cure certain legal issues, which we did not include. So that was a lot of words. Bill, is there anything that you'd like to add? That would be our proposed title, which builds substantially off of your work and the staff draft, but we think is a little more economical and a lot more descriptive.
I just have a quick question. So there's been going through this process for all 2 competing groups, and now it's my understanding that those groups have essentially reached agreement, and this measure and 170 are the agreement, and we don't have to worry about other things going forward.
I'm really glad, and I wish I meant to say that, Mr. Gallander. You're absolutely right. 67, 68, 69, and 48 and 50 have been withdrawn by the proponents. The appeals on 95 and 96 were dismissed by agreement of the parties, and 95 and 96 were withdrawn by the parties. So there is no chance of petition signer confusion or voter confusion at the ballot, because there would be multiple measures presented to voters in addition to these.
Excellent. Thanks.
All right. I have a couple of things. First of all, on the single subject, I think we have had some measures that have come out with an "and" in it, and I think that the change in criteria for redistricting, I would propose that we put it up in the single subject, that it's changing the criteria and establishing a new commission to draw maps. And then, so I'm just going to toss that out there. We don't have to write it up there, but just in terms of my thoughts. And then I'd like to put something in that talks about what that criteria change is instead of just adding some factors in there. Because what this does is it allows exceptions to the presumption that a county, a city and county or town should be contained in a single district, and that's the language from the initiative. And I think that's a pretty big change in the criteria. I'm not even really sure if that's the number one criteria anymore. I mean, is that the intent of it, Mr. Gruskin, or is it all sort of in one bucket now?
No, there are tiers of considerations. So the first tier, of course, is the Voting Rights Act and the Equal Protection Clause, equal population requirements. Second tier is preservation of communities of interest and political subdivisions. So that is a change because communities of interest really were far down on the list. So that is a change. The presumption operates to give political subdivisions kind of a first shot at any sort of competition, but it can be disproved by a preponderance of the evidence. So yes, that is a change. It is such a legalistic change that I'm anxious to see how you would describe it. I'm not sure that I know. And compactness needs to be part of that second tier. And then the next tier is political competitiveness.
Well, the way I was going to describe it is just allowing exceptions to the presumption that a county, a city and county or town should be contained in a single district. I mean, the exception is community of interest, right?
That is the way in which a political subdivision would, well, actually there are at least two. One is community of interest, but there, because population equality is first and obviously paramount and mandatory, you could also split a political subdivision because of population needs. So there's not just one exception for purposes of political subdivision splits. And I might add in that this measure mandates non-dilution of minority votes, which is basically taking the Voting Rights Act and making it a Colorado constitutional requirement. So that, I mean, I can't tell you how that would play out in terms of splits, but it is, you know, a clear mandate to the commission that they can't even draw a map that would either have the purpose of or the effect of diluting minority vote.
So before this measure, what was first, compactness and keeping the boundaries?
The first was still population and Voting Rights Act.
Right.
Then it was the maximum. There was a presumption in terms of there was treatment of political subdivisions as being intact within districts.
Right.
Then there was compactness and contiguity. Then there were communities of interest, and the court has acknowledged in case law, without it being in the reapportionment amendment, that competitiveness could be a factor, but it was relegated to very slight consideration. Or secondary consideration, I guess, better way to put that.
All right. Anyone on the board have a opinion on the single subject or on my language about the division of the subdivision lines?
I would just remind the board that 67, 68, and 69, and 95 and 96 kind of got amalgamated. So in a lot of ways, you know, the criteria that are changed here were changed also in 95 and 96. And there, your single subject. Your single subject recitation did not refer to criteria. I'm sorry, Madam Chair, but I want to make sure that I'm not sending you down an incorrect.
I think you're right. 95 said an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning congressional redistricting and in connection therewith.
Right. And so I think it is fair still to have a clear-cut single subject statement that addresses legislative redistricting and then address those elements clearly within
I think that's fine.
I mean, I think.
What about the language about the exceptions? I think that's right. But what about putting something in about what criteria is being changed instead of just saying establishing the criteria to be met? I just think this one is a really important one when you look at the way the courts have done redistricting decisions in the past. You know, changing that presumption that you keep the subdivisions intact is potentially going to have a huge impact on redistricting. If communities of interest now is parallel to the subdivision line, if it's in the same bucket with the subdivision line, I think that's a pretty big change. I think it would be a surprise to voters that their political subdivision could be divided down the middle of a street now because the people on the north side have a, quote, community of interest different than the people on the south side. Any thoughts on that, putting that in?
I wouldn't object to it.
Okay. Then where we talk about so after we say establishing the criteria to be met by the new, then we would say, comma, allowing exceptions to the presumption that a county, comma, a city, comma, city and county, or town should be contained in a single district. And then a comma, and go on from there.
Should we be saying something like additional exceptions or, expanding the exception? Because it's pointed out, I mean, obviously, like, you know, Denver is not going to be in a single district. It's got too many people.
Okay, additional exceptions is fine.
It's just a little odd that we would talk about the exceptions without talking about what the rule is, which is preserving communities of interest and political subdivisions, but allowing for certain exceptions to a presumption that subdivision should be maintained whole within a district. I mean, if you're a voter and you hear that there's an exception, but you don't, I mean, I'd venture to say most voters don't currently know that political subdivisions and communities of interest are considerations in redistricting. So in order for the exception to make sense, it seems to me that we ought to say that there is some sort of general rule of preservation. M- much like the language that is stricken there about preservation of communities of interest and political subdivisions. And I also just, as a general matter, wonder whether or not having, I mean, right now, political subdivisions can be split for political, for population purposes at the legislative level. So the notion of exceptions, and there are a number of such political subdivisions like Gunnison County that is split for population purposes. So it may feel like it is a change. It is a change. It is not a change to allow for the split of such subdivisions, whether it's through size or through population needs of adjacent districts.
No, don't you think that's covered by additional exceptions? Because that is an exception. Now you're adding an additional one.
I just don't think that that's the very first or second thing that voters are going to be interested in knowing about this measure.
Well, maybe, but it's a huge impact of the measure.
I guess we don't know yet, but what it does right now is solidify what at least is within the commission's jurisdiction right now, which is to acknowledge the need to have certain jurisdictions, particularly those below the county level, in multiple districts.
I don't know. I'm fine with it.
Leaving it all aside, I think where we've put it causes us a bit of a language problem with the including on line six, having to go back to the maps. So we have to do something about that one way or another.
Which one?
So we say the criteria on line four to be met by new district maps. And then now on line six, we say including maximizing number of competitive districts. Those two things still have to go together, I think.
Oh, okay. So maybe move it down.
Yes. And I think if you don't object, I'd go past also the prohibiting the protection plans, because I think those are tied to the competitiveness.
That's fine.
Down to line 12. Did you go that far?
Yeah, and I think we might be able to streamline the language a little bit about the race and ethnic origin and that stuff.
Yeah.
But
can I just point out that there currently, under existing law, is no presumption that a political subdivision is maintained? There are certain requirements that exist as to the prioritization of political subdivision lines, but literally, this measure creates out of whole cloth a presumption against which the evidence of a community of interest would be tested. So it isn't really accurate to say allow exceptions to the presumption, because there isn't a current presumption, therefore there aren't current exceptions to that presumption.
So what is there right now, a formula?
There's a priority ordering of criteria. I think you could maybe call it a formula.
No, so we could say additional exceptions to the formula.
Mr. Hobbs points out that the current constitutional amendment talks about minimizing county splits. So there already are exceptions to the mandate or the priority that they be maintained whole. So that really has been reserved to the commission's discretion in light of the other factors, which has made it a malleable requirement. And I don't know that, in fact, there would be more splits under this scenario. It's just a matter that it would be assessed by a specific provision in the Constitution rather than left to the total discretion of the Reapportionment Commission.
Well, but in the last couple rounds of redistricting, that formula has been what the court has relied on. And now you're changing it so it's not a formula anymore. You're changing it so that you can now split a political subdivision based on a community of interest, which is a much more squishy, quote, criteria, right? So you're taking something that was pretty certain, you know, i.e. you cannot split subdivisions. I mean, I think that this particular split really gives the ability to gerrymander in a way that we haven't had before, which is to now say we're going to call them communities of interest and we're going to get rid of the natural boundaries that exist for communities of interest and allow this split down the middle of a road in the middle of a town or the middle of a county or whatever by, you know, bringing a bunch of people in to say, I have this community of interest that doesn't align with the fact that I live in this county. And I think that's a really significant difference. And the courts have relied on that formula to kick those plans back in the past, and now they're not going to be able to rely on that formula anymore. And so those kinds of plans are now going to pass, potentially. So I just think it's a really big issue that needs to be described somehow. I mean, I'm willing to describe it a different way, but I'm personally not willing to pass on a question that doesn't at least address this idea that there will no longer be a formula for the court.
Well, let me say this. I think that what this measure does that the existing case law and the constitutional provision does not do is define community of interest. In order to be a community of interest, you have to have an issue of legislative import at the state legislative level. Or, you know, we also talked in that definition about political subdivision lines and about ensuring efficient delivery of governmental services. So the truth is the political subdivision can be the community of interest. I think, you know, when you talk about gerrymandering, what that triggers for me is a high level of arbitrariness that's generated by partisan interest. And that has been perhaps an opening that the decision makers have had because there hasn't been any direction about what a community of interest really is. You're right. Anybody could come in and say, look at me, I'm part of this neighborhood, or, you know, we share the same park or pool or whatever, that might have absolutely nothing to do with what a legislator does. This really clamps down on the kinds of community of interest perspectives that can be raised because you have to have an issue of legislative import, or you have to have a community that is geared to a political subdivision.
Right, but it's no longer after the political subdivision line. I mean, you're right. It's now defined, which, okay, if it was defined and it wasn't an exception to drawing a line down the middle of the road so that I'm separated from my neighbors because now all of a sudden, you know, our pool or, I mean, I don't know. I mean, a legislative interest? I mean, what is that? My, you know, all my neighbors on the north own guns and none of my neighbors on the south. I mean, I don't know what that means either. And so we used to have this formula. Well, we do have this formula that talks about how you got to keep the political subdivision together. And that's what the court has relied on, that particular formula. And now that formula is going away and opening up the potential to now have people come in and say, I don't have a community of interest with my neighbor across the street who lives in the same city, I have a community of interest, you know, with the people who live to the north or south across the political subdivision line, because we share an interest in, you know, whatever. Fishing, I don't know. Whatever their legislative interest is. I just think it's a really big change. And I think the voters have a right to know that this formula is going away.
And just to be clear, I'm not arguing that this isn't a feature of the measure that you could describe in the title. I want to make sure that it's described accurately so that we don't imply that there are presumptions that don't
exist. That's fine with me. I mean, I'm happy to. I mean, I know it was mine, so I'm not saying come up with some language, but I'm saying if you don't like my language,
no, that's
come
fair.
Up with some language.
That's fair.
Anybody else want to? I mean, some of the other stuff in there. I don't know if you want to move
Madam
on.
Madam Chair, could I suggest, since the lunch break was discussed anyway, maybe we would be a little bit more creative if we were a little less hungry?
Sure.
I'm speaking of me, not we. And would it be possible for us to maybe come back and provide you with some language after everyone's had an opportunity to?
That'd be great.
To break.
All right, let's take half hour, Steve, or you want more?
40 minutes.
40 minutes, okay. So that'll give us till about quarter after?
Yep.
All right, quarter after one, we'll come back.